You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good evening, everybody. It is Sunday night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joined, as always, for our Steelers post-game show by Post-Gazette sports columnist Paul Zeiss. Paul, quite the victory there. It looked like the Steelers were cruising, in the second half after that second touchdown, and then things kind of bogged down a little bit. Some controversial calls. I'm going to get your opinion on those in a minute. But a 2018 victory, the Steelers are 2-1 after 3 weeks. I think that's right about where a lot of people thought they'd be. Your thoughts on this victory before we get into some of the more controversial elements of it.
I thought it was good for the offense to get going a little bit. I thought we saw some, more creativity in some ways from the offense. Kenny Pickett made a couple of throws tonight that were pretty good. Overall, I thought that they played better on that side of the ball than they had. Defense is good. I've said this all along. I think the Steelers are good enough the way they play to beat bad teams, and that's what they did tonight. And one of the things that they don't do that these bad teams do is hurt themselves. They don't kill themselves. They don't throw – they got away with one. Early in the game, Kenny Pickett should have thrown a pick six. But it was dropped. But for the most part, they don't make those kind of mistakes. When they play bad teams, they just basically try and keep the ball in front of them and let the other team implode. So all in all, you got what you wanted out of it. It was a win. I don't know that I know a ton more about the Steelers now than I did before the game started, but I think you got to win. You got to keep winning and try and get better every week, and I think that's what they did.
Paul, I think the big headline here is the roughing the passer call and Minkah Fitzpatrick, so let's talk about that in a second. Before we do, though, just want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Paul, I think it would have been a pretty easy victory in the end had it not been for that roughing the passer call on Minkah Fitzpatrick late in the fourth quarter that basically gave Vegas new life. It was the second controversial call, really, of the game. There was that crackback block that George Pickens was called for in the first half that arguably took some points on the board because Kenny Pickett's long run would have had them set up with, first and goal inside the five. What did you think of those two calls tonight? What did you think of the referees generally? Because, I think they definitely swung maybe at least 6 points, if not more, depending upon how things play out.
Well, again, I thought the referees, they had a couple of times when they actually picked up flags, which I thought, that tells me that they were actually talking and trying to get make the right calls. The Minkah Fitzpatrick call was horrific. That's a terrible call. There's no ands, ifs, or buts there. That's just as bad of a call as you'll see in a football game. By the same token, if you looked at it from the angle where the referee was, I would tell you that if you looked at it from the angle where the referee and what the referee was looking at, I might say, well, okay. I could see what the referee's looking at there. So I didn't think it was quite as horrific as it is if you watch it in slow motion, because it does look like from the back, and you got to imagine, and you know, it, full speed from the back, what it's looking like, right? It might, but it's a terrible call. I mean, it's just it's a ridiculously bad call. They missed a couple. I thought they missed a couple. You know, hands to the head to defensive Raiders defensive players got a shot on Kenny Pickett to his head. I also think that, you know, you can go both ways. On the long touchdown to, Calvin Austin, there was a blatant hold on Chukwuemeka that they didn't call. So I always say that the calls kind of, you know, obviously late in the game in that situation, they're magnified. But throughout the course of the game, I kind of feel like the calls probably even themselves out.
Should that be reviewable, Paul? I mean, that's basically the NFL equivalent of targeting, the helmet-to-helmet being roughing the passer, even if it's on a sack. In college, they review those calls all the time. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of controversy when they're reviewed. Doesn't seem to take up too many times because maybe there's one or two calls like that in a game. And they're automatically reviewed. It's not even like you have to throw the challenge flag. They're automatically reviewed. Was this actually targeting or not? Sometimes they just, you know, they take the targeting off and the player doesn't get disqualified. Should that be reviewable in the NFL, considering college ranks already do it pretty well?
I don't know. I think if you start reviewing that, then there's a whole lot of other calls that you bring into the equation that you can possibly review. I think what they found out when they tried to review the thing about targeting and why it's reviewable is because it's an ejection. And so they want to make sure that if they're going to eject the guy, that he actually did what they said. I don't know. I think that, they found out when they started trying to review pass interference calls that it's almost a recipe for disaster. So probably not. I would say probably not.
I think they could do it. So Squirmy is in favor of that one, considering college can do it. And I don't think there's that many calls in an NFL game. I don't think you're going to be seeing it like you do with pass interference, where there's 3-5 calls every game for that particular penalty. I get why they didn't want to do that anymore. I think with the helmet to helmet, though, and how clear the rules are, that you could figure those out. Paul, what did you think of the Raiders' decision to go with 3 there at the end at 4th and 4, deep in Steelers territory? All the Steelers really needed was one first down to kill the clock. I thought it in today's NFL, I thought it was a very conservative call. Yes, you technically have 4 timeouts with the 2-minute warning, but again, you only need one. You only need one first down from the Steelers, and I couldn't believe that they did that in today's NFL.
Well, there was like 10 minutes left. They had a chance that they could have kicked a field goal and went for it on 4th. I didn't understand that. I had a lot bigger problem with that than I did with them kicking the field goal late. To me, with about 10 minutes left or 11 minutes left or whatever it was in the game, they had a similar. It was like a 4th and 4, wasn't it? 4th and 5, 4th and 4, something like that. I think they threw an incomplete pass. But to me, with 10, 11 minutes left, it was 23-7. If you kick the field goal there, when you score the touchdown, right, now it's 23-17. It's 23-16. You just kick the extra point. You don't got to go for 2. If you have that field goal, you just kick the extra point, and then you don't have to think about going for 2 again. And probably that came into the thinking a little bit, which was, well, if we score a touchdown here and go for 2, then we're going to need another score anyway, right, if we don't make it. I know a lot of people hated that. I didn't hate it as much as most people because, quite frankly, the Steelers' offense really hadn't done a whole lot in the 4th quarter. They basically caught the Raiders in a bad defense. If the Raiders play coverage there, they probably don't get the first down. And now all of a sudden, you know, you got the ball back with about 2 minutes and 5 seconds left and, you know, a timeout. If it's an incomplete pass, you have a timeout in the 2-minute warning. To me, the more egregious one was passing on the field goal earlier in the game when they had a chance to get to within 13 with 10 minutes left. Because with 10 minutes left, you think to yourself, well, you know what? We probably could get the ball two, maybe even three times, you know, more if we just play defense here. So I probably lean towards I would have gone for it on fourth and four there. But I didn't hate it as much as some people did because I felt like they screwed it up the first time. The first time, even if you get the first down there, you still have 20 yards to go before you score a touchdown. You could run three more plays and then end up having to kick a field goal. Now you've wasted 2.5 minutes or whatever. So the first one is the one that I think was the really passing on that field goal attempt, I thought was a really bad decision.
Yeah, but once you've made that decision, Paul, I think you still need a touchdown at the end. Are you better off getting a touchdown when you're less than 10 yards away? Or are you better off hoping you get a stop? And you're still probably going to have to drive the length of the field to get that exact same touchdown you need.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, no, but that's not really, I mean, to me, the question is simple. The question is, do you feel like one play there, fourth and four, you have a better chance on fourth and four, one play, or do you have a better chance maybe having the ball at your, say, your 25-yard line with 2.5 minutes or 2 minutes and 5 seconds left, a timeout, and the 2-minute warning? I'm going to take my chances with more plays, probably, than I am, you know, especially since, you know, really, three drives in a row, they moved the ball. You know, they turned it over, right? They kicked the field goal, I think, on one of them. They turned it over. You know, they moved the ball. So, to me, I would say to myself, the Steelers haven't done anything this entire fourth quarter. We get a stop. We've moved the ball. We'll be back in this position on the 18-20-yard line and maybe have three or four plays instead of one. So, I didn't hate it as much as many people did. I hated the first decision, though.
Yeah, I will give you that. Paul, let's talk a little bit about the Steelers themselves. I think the big takeaway for me tonight is that this started to look like the second half of last season offensively from Kenny Pickett, from Matt Canada in terms of mixing the play calls and kind of getting the tempo that I think he's wanted through these first couple of weeks. It's not pretty a lot of times, especially, you know, early in the game, but it was just enough against a team like the Raiders. Do you have a level of confidence that they are back where they were and that they can build from here and maybe get better? Because I think that was the key. You at least had to be as good as you were offensively at the end of last season. They weren't in the first two games. I did think they were tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, they build on they have something to build on here. You know, they showed that they can move the ball a little bit. They showed that they can mix it up a little bit. I thought the play calling was a little better. You know, I think that to me, I can't understand why Najee Harris is still, you know, getting more reps than Jaylen Warren, because it's very clear to me that Jaylen Warren is a better runner. When he gets the ball, he hits the hole. He goes downhill. He makes, you know, I think they're better when he's in the game than when Najee Harris is in the game. But that's the only thing I would basically, you know, I would basically say that's something I need to continue to explore.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, Paul, because one thing I noticed tonight is how slow these Steelers' runs are to develop. And it doesn't matter if it's Najee or if it's Jaylen Warren back there. It just seems like the action that leads to the handoff and then actually attacking the line of scrimmage is just little slow, pokey. And I think that when that's the way the offense is working, it is better suited to Jaylen Warren because he's a better one-cut runner. And Najee Harris kind of has the more all-around package. But if you can't get him the ball quickly, if you can't make that exchange quickly, I think it makes things a lot more difficult. What do you think about the mechanics of that Steelers running game right now, regardless of who's back there?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the run game, to me, that's why Jaylen Warren is a better option. Because to me, he's almost going full speed when he has the ball in his hands. You know, he sort of shoots out of there, and some of those runs that he has where he gets 1 or 2 yards, if it was Harris, they would be, you know, they'd lose yardage because Harris is slow getting, you know, getting moving. And so I would tell you that part of their game, they've got to get a little better, that ball handling part of their game. But some of their plays, you're right, develop very slowly. And, you know, some of the delayed handoffs they have, I'm just not a big fan of. And I just feel like you have to, you know, to me, look at those things and say, we're not really giving our run game a great chance in this, you know, by basically, you know, some of the delayed handoffs, some of the delay counter plays that they try and run, all of that action behind the offensive line. I feel like just get the ball, drop back and get the ball in the gut of one of your running backs and let them run.
Yeah, it's like when the defense reads the play correctly, Paul, and knows that there's going to be some delay, you know, then you're almost taking the ball out of your running back's hands, regardless of who it is, because, you know, they're already starting from behind the eight ball and they're having to overcorrect. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't look pretty. I will give them some credit. They did seem to have a little bit more flow tonight. They did get some nice rushes. I think this is, you know, again, a lot closer to what you know, people saw at the end of last season and were hoping we were going to see earlier than this. Paul, let's talk specifically about Kenny Pickett a little bit. You mentioned that missed pick six, that near miss with Marcus Peters in the first half. I think there were a number of throws that, you know, he still seemed rushed. He still seemed like, you know, he was speeding things up in his head and making it almost impossible for himself. But then there were other times that, you know, he was finding George Pickens in stride. He was, you know, he made the long throw to Calvin Austin. What did you think of what you saw from him specifically in terms of execution tonight?
I thought he was better. I thought he was a lot better, actually. Still bailed out a little bit too much sometimes. Got out of the pocket sometimes when he probably still had another second or two that he could have made a throw. Made a couple of bad decisions, but you're going to do that from time to time. I thought one of the most important things they did tonight was move him around a little bit. The touchdown to Pat Freiermuth, that was 100% scheme. You know, pretty much every quarterback that's ever played in an NFL uniform is making that throw. Because, you know, Pat Freiermuth ran a good route. They countered what the Raiders were doing. And Freiermuth was wide open. And Kenny Pickett rolled out. If you remember, there's a little play action, you know, to it. And then he rolled out. You know, he's making those are the things that you do to help your quarterback out. We talked, you know, we've talked a lot for the last 2 weeks about the 49ers with Brock Purdy. That's some of the kind of stuff they do with him. You know, he's not really asked to throw tough, you know, to make a lot of tough throws. You know, they kind of scheme guys open and they kind of scheme him in a place where, you know, he's going to make, maybe he only has one read, but it's going to be something like that with Freiermuth where, you know what, if we get the right defensive look on this play, we are going to be able to have a wide open, you know, very easy touchdown. So I thought he played much better tonight. The only thing, and I hate this because people get all worked up and say you're a hater and all this other stuff. The only thing I would caution is that Raiders stink. They are one of the worst defenses in the league, period. And, you know, statistically, numbers-wise, whatever, they're bad. So I got to take that into account, you know. I got to take that into account when I look at this situation. I got to figure out, okay, how much of this is the Steelers really improved and how much of it is they just played a bad defense?
Well, through that lens, Paul, how encouraged were you tonight to kind of see that the chemistry between George Pickens and Kenny Pickett continue a little bit? He found him in stride. He gave him room to make some plays in space. I actually thought it was a lot better performance than last week, even though they hit the long touchdown against Cleveland. I think they missed on a lot of connections last week, despite that long touchdown. Tonight, it seemed like they were a lot more dialed in. But does the defense factor in for you there, or were you encouraged?
No, I mean, again, I thought he played better. I mean, I think he made better throws and better decisions and better reads. So, you know, you can't take that away from him. That's obviously a big part of it. He played better. All I'm saying is when I watch the Raiders, I also have to watch and know the fact that they're bad. They're a bad team. And so, and you know, as an aside, you know, Josh McDaniel passing on a field goal when he should have kicked it and then kicking a field goal when, you know, probably he should have went for it. Some of the decision-making he made in the fourth quarter, some of his clock management. That's the difference between Mike Tomlin and a guy like Josh McDaniel. Mike Tomlin wins games like this and Josh McDaniel loses them. You know, I would say the same thing about the guy out in San Diego, like the Chargers coach, right? He loses games like this. And Mike Tomlin wins these kinds of games. Because for whatever you think about Mike Tomlin, and there are people that don't like him, and I get it, and they don't, you know, 7 years without, or six or whatever it is, 7 years without a playoff or whatever, all that stuff, I get it. But he's got, you know, he's got a lot of Bill Cowher in him. You know, he believes in certain fundamentals in football. And basically, you know, the Steelers rarely beat themselves where they, you know, just completely make bad decision after bad decision and bad play after bad play and everything else. And it's almost like when they got up 23-7, there was no chance Kenny Pickett was going to throw an interception, you know, to change the game because they weren't going to let him be in that situation. So, you know, to me, the Steelers are going to beat bad teams because they do the things you have to do to win, and they do some of the certain fundamentals that you need to win, and they do those things usually pretty consistently. The question becomes, when you get into a game with the Chiefs or the Bills, or even if Burrow's healthy, the Bengals, or one of these teams where they've got quarterback that can, you know, throw the ball around the field, and you know they're going to score points and all that other stuff, and you can't really play keep away in so many, you know, in so many ways. Okay, now are the Steelers high powered enough to win those kind of games? That's the question that needs to be answered. I had no doubt in my mind, really, in many ways, the Steelers are going to win almost all of these, despite the whole Tomlin game thing. If you look historically, you know what Tomlin does? Beats bad teams. He does. Every so often he has a stinker. It's the NFL. Every so often you have a stinker. But if you look at his record against bad teams, it's overwhelmingly really good.
Yeah, I mean, just look at how they've dominated the Browns. Paul, long touchdown to Calvin Austin tonight. I think that was another just encouraging display of explosiveness from this offense. The ability to, even if they don't have things working it all the time, they can hit that one or two splash plays in a game that turns into 10 points that helps you when you don't have the flow for the rest of the game. So I wanted to ask what you thought of Calvin Austin, whether he changed your perception of him at all tonight as, you know, kind of the first chance he had to show that speed in a game-breaking way.
Well, that's what you want from a guy like him, right? You want to put him in a position where he might only touch it once or twice, but when he does, it's going to be a big play. Clearly, you know, him getting down the middle. But again, it's almost like we have to give Matt Canada a little bit of credit. That was a play where they caught the Raiders, right, in a good look for that play to work. You know, they had what they have two safeties deep high, and you know it was he just basically split them, and you know they didn't have anybody running with him. So at that point, it was I think it was actually a blitz too. At that point, you know, it's almost an easy throw and catch in many ways. The only question is, do you put the ball in the right place? And so you know, we like to criticize and whatnot Matt Canada when things don't go well. You know, it can't be, well, Canada sucks when things aren't working, and when things are working, well, it's the players. You know, it's a little bit of both on both ends. You know, when the offense isn't working or clicking, a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, Canada maybe not calling good plays, and then also, you know, players not executing. because that was an example of a really well-schemed play, a really well-schemed play where they made the right call against the right defense, and then you got a guy like Calvin Austin running up the middle of the field wide open. You know, it's just a matter of does Pickett put it where it needs to be so he can catch it, and he did.
Yeah, I thought that was an encouraging sign. Let's talk a little bit about this offensive line. People are in the comments weighing in saying that they didn't look great. I certainly did see that at times tonight, but I think kind of the theme of the night was that I think they showed a little bit of progress, especially in the running game. You got a little bit of momentum. You got a little bit of chemistry going. What's your level of confidence in this group now that they have these three tough pass rushers behind them? You had Bosa in week one, Garrett in week two, and Max Crosby in week three. Now you're going down to Houston, and you know presumably things aren't going to be quite as challenging, especially in that pass rushing front. Do you feel better about this group than you did going into the night?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I thought that Tukes had a tough night. Tukes and Okorafor had a tough night on the right side. But I felt like they ran the ball a little bit better. They gave themselves an opportunity, you know, to establish a little bit of the run game. I thought they were more physical at the point of attack. I thought, you know, at times they gave Kenny Pickett enough time to throw the ball and enough of a pocket that he could step into his throw and get it to where he needed to get it to. So, yeah, I mean, I think they made some progress. I told you when you've got, you know, new guys put together, even at the beginning of the season with a few guys and it played together, you know, it takes an offensive line 3-4 weeks before they really start to figure it out and come together. Because that is a unit that has to work 5-1. You know, it's chemistry is a huge part of that. So I think they took a step forward tonight. I know there were some plays where they, you know, they didn't play very well, but tonight I thought they played, you know, reasonably well.
Good to see Pat Freiermuth quickly here on the offense before we get into the defense. Was it good to see Pat Freiermuth finally get involved here after people have been screaming for him for the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, what you want from him. You want, you know, him to be a weapon like he was tonight. And I thought pretty much a lot of what they did with him was scheme and scheme and play calling and countering what the Raiders were doing on defense, which is what you want from your offense. You know, you want to be able to, it's not going to happen every single play, but you want to be able for your quarterback and your receivers to basically play pitch and catch. And Freiermuth should be one of their primary targets. You know, he should be a guy that they try and get the ball to, you know, and so to me, I liked it, but we need to see more of it.
Going to get into the defense here in a second. Just want to mention a couple more sponsors first. Goldberg, Persky & White. If you were diagnosed with mesothelioma or lung cancer, call your local attorneys at Goldberg, Persky & White. For over 40 years, their firm has represented thousands of lung cancer and mesothelioma victims. Call 1-800-COMPLEX or visit gpwlaw.com for a free consultation. Also want to mention Propel Schools. Propel's 13 public charter schools in Allegheny County build a solid academic foundation for lifelong learning and offer more personalized instruction at every level during your child's kindergarten through 12th grade journey. Give your children the quality education they deserve. Learn and apply more or apply to Propel Schools by visiting propelschools.org. Levi Wallace, I think, was the big headline for me tonight. Paul on the defensive side of the ball gets a couple of interceptions, gets a couple of pretty crucial pass breakups. What did you think of the way he bounced back and where he belongs in this cornerback rotation in the long run here with Joey Porter breathing down his neck really last week? I think he stepped up really well.
Yeah, I mean, he played like a veteran. I thought he had some tough plays early in the game where he didn't play so well. But as the game wore on, he seemed to figure some things out. I thought he played a lot better than he did last week. The first interception, terrible throw by Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't even know what he was looking at in that throw. He kind of threw it right in between Wallace's 2 and 9. And the second interception was, you know, just basically Jimmy Garoppolo just basically almost throwing up one for grabs and hoping that they get a pass interference or, you know, something happens where they can move the ball up and then they get a Hail Mary shot. So his interceptions obviously were key, but I thought his pass breakups were probably more impressive than his interceptions because that is something that he hadn't shown really this year. But his ability to cover, his ability to get a, you know, his hand on the ball and knock it, you know, free a few times, really sort of saved the Steelers, and, you know, stop drives. So, I mean, to me, it's going to be up to Joey Porter, to figure out a way to beat him out. But if he plays like tonight, he probably is not going to get beat out.
Were you impressed by the Steelers' run defense tonight, or were you surprised how ineffective Vegas continues to be in that area?
Yeah, I don't really understand it. How can they be so bad? I mean, their offensive line cannot be that bad. When you've got a running back as good as they have, they should be better than they are. You know, late in the game, I thought that was one of the reasons they were able to move the ball, is because they were able to, you know, get a few runs and get him going a little bit. Part of that, though, again, is you are against a defense that's designed to stop the pass at that point, right? So you know, there's probably going to be a few more running lanes and things of the such, but they're bad at it. It's not just tonight; they've been bad at it all week. I mean, all season they've been bad at it. It's puzzling, and I don't get it. But you know what, Adam? Bad teams are bad for a reason. I just say that all the time, you know. So I can honestly tell you, I had no doubt the Steelers were going to hang on and win the game, no matter what the Raiders did. I had no doubt. In fact, I had no doubt if they'd have went for it on 4th and 4, they wouldn't have made it. Honestly, they're just, that's how it is when you're a bad team. Those things go against you.
Keanu Benton had that big first sack tonight. He also broke through or drew that big holding penalty late in the game. Is he the Steelers' best rookie right now? And if so, does that surprise you, given how much hype, you know, accompanied Broderick Jones and Joey Porter Jr. in particular?
No. I mean, I think we talked about it in the preseason that I thought he would be a player that would make some impact for them. I thought he would be a good player for them. I liked what I saw from him in the preseason. The only if you're asking me, is it shocking? It's shocking to me because I thought Joey Porter Jr. would be playing a lot right now. I thought he would be playing enough where he would really be an impact player, but he isn't. And so, you know, Keanu Benton's gotten some opportunities. You know, what's his name? Herbig. He had a few opportunities last week. As long as Broderick Jones and the other guy that doesn't see the field at all, remember, he was going to revolutionize the tight end position as Darnell Washington. I mean, at the end of the day, it pretty much has been a thing of where the rookies probably one at a time here and there have made a little bit of an impact, but I don't know that any of them have really distinguished themselves yet.
In terms of the defense tonight as well, we saw Marcus Golden get through for a sack. That was the second time in two games. Does he kind of look like that fabled number three that the Steelers have needed to kind of bolster the depth behind TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith? Is he finally that guy after they've chewed through, you know, all kind of free agents, all kind of camp invites, and never really have seemed to find that guy between these top two? Do you feel better about where they are with that?
Well, I like him, you know, rushing the passer for sure. I mean, I feel like it's one of those things where he's a guy who's a veteran, who understands how to get to the passer, who understands how to, you know, sort of seal that edge and come off the edge. So yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, the one thing I'll say is I do feel like they need to give TJ Watt a little bit more rest than they have in the, you know, tonight. He's a guy who obviously his body, you know, breaks down and wears down. Tonight he looked like he was winded, you know, in the fourth quarter there. I thought he was a little less effective. Part of it probably is he's fatigued and all that other stuff. Well, you know, now you've got a guy, it looks like you can put him in there someplace, you know, and give those guys a little bit more rest so that in the fourth quarter they're fresh.
Any level of concern next week about these Houston Texans, Paul? They pulled out an unexpected beating of the Jaguars today. C.J. Stroud looked great. Tank Dell, a guy we talked a lot about in our Steelers mock draft videos, going into the NFL draft process as a possible Steelers pick, has been tearing it up, is probably in the early conversation for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Is this going to be a tougher game than maybe we expected when we went into the season, maybe circled that one as a likely victory?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it'll be a little tougher. They should still win the game. You know, there were some weird games today. I mean, Arizona beating Dallas is, I don't even know what happened there. That was ridiculous. You lose to Josh Dobbs. You're Dallas and you have that defense. It looks like it might be, the first 2 weeks looks like it might be historic, and you lose to Josh Dobbs and give up, what, 30 points or whatever it was. The other game, obviously the Colts beating the Ravens was a little bit weird in Baltimore. The thing about this Jacksonville-Texans game, number one, it's a divisional game. And that, you know, those two teams kind of know each other. But here's the other thing. You know, Jacksonville had that run of, what, 6 or 7 wins last year in order to get to the playoffs. They've been a dud this year. You know, was that just sort of a fluke? I mean, they should be playing better than they're playing. You know, you want to tell me last week, okay, they played the Chiefs, maybe, but they only scored 9 points. And they look like, you know, it looks almost looks like Trevor Lawrence has sort of regressed. And so I would say, to me at least, the fact that the Texans beat Jacksonville probably speaks more about Jacksonville in some ways, and also the fact that it's a divisional game. I do think C.J. Stroud is a lot better already than I thought he would be. There's no question about that. He's come a long way in a short time, and so that'll make that a little bit challenging for the Steelers. But this is one of those games you look on your schedule, you have to win it if you want to be a playoff team. You can't lose bad like the Ravens. You can't lose to a bad team on your home field. You just can't. So, you know, that's where the Steelers seem to have an advantage is, you know, they don't generally lose to bad teams.
Yeah, I think that'll be an interesting matchup next week. After you get one victory on the road, can you follow it up with another against a bad team? Paul, I'll get you out of here on this. Great turnout from Steelers fans in Las Vegas tonight. I don't know that that was necessarily a surprise. I think a lot of people wanted to make that trip. It's the first time the Steelers have been out there since the Raiders moved. I'm just continued to be impressed by Steelers fans outside of Pittsburgh. But then the Steelers play in Pittsburgh against the 49ers, and the stadium's half 49ers fans. Are the Steelers fans out of town like more hardcore at this point than some of the Steelers fans in Pittsburgh?
Well, no, I mean, part of it is a lot of those people live in Vegas or live out in California or live out that way, and it's a short trip to Vegas. You know, that's their one and only opportunity maybe to go see the Steelers. You know, Steeler fans here are somewhat spoiled. They are, you know, they have, you know, 10 times a year they get a chance to see the Steelers, 9 or 10 times, depending, you know, on what season or whatever. But they get a chance, and I'm telling you, a lot of the Steelers fans that own season tickets are older, Adam, and old people don't like to go outside in the cold weather. They don't like, you know, when they were in their 20s, it was cool to go sit outside when it was raining or when it was, you know, snowing or whatever. But when you're, you know, as you start to get to be my age, you have no desire to be outside in the cold, you know, and watching a game and all that other stuff. Some people do, but you start to lose interest in it. So at that point, then what do? You'd start selling your tickets, right? And so that would be, to me, what I would tell you. Out of town, most of those people that were at that game, although for the Vegas game, I will say a lot of people did travel out there. But like when you see them play the Chargers, or even the Dolphins, a lot of the people that go to those games are transplanted Pittsburghers or they're Steeler fans that live there. And so that's their one and only shot, really, to see the Steelers. And that's probably why it is like that, you know?
Yeah, I definitely see that element to it, Paul. It's just so striking to me that every time the Steelers go on the road, you know, it's not just Vegas. It's pretty much all those West Coast cities. You know, Steelers fans turn out, and the whole Steelers Nation thing, you know, it's so true when you see them play on the road, and then sometimes at home you kind of like turn your head, and not just because they sell their tickets to other teams. There's been nights where there's, you know, 10,000 no shows, Paul, in Pittsburgh, and I just think
absolutely,
yeah, and it's at odds with, you know, the reputation, and I wonder if it's time for that to be noted, you know, when you go to Las Vegas and have a crowd like they did tonight.
Well, Paul, what I was saying was. if you're in Pittsburgh and it's a cold, rainy day, and you're playing the Falcons, or you're playing Jacksonville, there's not going to be a ton of those fans that are going to travel to come buy the tickets up, which is why there are a lot of no-shows. But under those same circumstances, I was in the stadium a few years ago when they played Dallas, and it was a kind of a colder night. You know, it wasn't, it was, I don't know if it was raining, but it was sort of one of those nights where the weather wasn't perfect and it wasn't going to be perfect. I think it might've even been a night game, or, you know, which is, you know, Steeler fans, cause they're old, hate, but either way, they sold that game was completely sold out. Every seat was taken because Dallas has a zillion fans as well, and they came and bought up tickets. And there's a lot of Cowboy fans here in Western PA and, you know, in the surrounding areas, because the Cowboys are one of those teams from the 70s. So, you know, when there are no shows, quite often the no shows are because they're not playing a very, you know, a team that has a great fan base. Like, you don't see no shows when they play the Patriots. You didn't see no shows in those games, because Patriots fans bought all the tickets up. When the Browns come down, it's a lot of Browns fans, you know, buy tickets and whatnot. You know, so, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I do think that it's not necessarily just about passion. It's about the fact that, you know, those people on the road, they only have one shot to see the Steelers. And so they go, that's what they want to do.
Yeah, that's fair too. Paul, I will let you go for the evening with any final thoughts from you.
No, I mean, again, it was a good effort by the Steelers. I thought they did some better things tonight, got a little better, did what they always do, which is they beat bad teams. And if you keep beating bad teams, guess what? Maybe you get a little bit better and better, and then eventually maybe you start beating good teams.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if they can keep that momentum going next week against Houston. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. We had a great audience after a night game. We always appreciate when you make us your stop when it's late at night to talk Steelers, especially. So thank you for that. Also, just a reminder, if you enjoyed this video, please pop a like on it. Help us out in the YouTube algorithm. Please also make sure you are tuned in to see Christopher Carter on the North Shore Drive Monday morning. We're also going to have Michael McHenry, Jason Mackey talking Pirates on Pitching In. And Jerry Dulac, Ray Fittipaldi will be reacting to this game. He'll be up on the channel a little bit later. They'll be reacting from the press box or the field in Las Vegas. So tons of Steelers, tons of Pittsburgh sports content coming your way. I will be talking to Paul again next week after that game at Houston, afternoon game. So maybe we'll go a little bit longer. But otherwise, thanks for joining me tonight, Paul. And we'll talk to you again on Thursday when you and I do our regular Thursday video.
All right, man. Sounds good. I'll talk to you.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you enjoyed the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check out our Apple Podcast channel for more podcast content. Click below for a special deal of 99 cents for a 3-month subscription to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.